Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. It's brought to you by Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort on Devil's Lake. Also brought to you by Lake of the Woods and Lake of the Woods Tourism and Mid-Migration Outfitters. Find all these guys, haybaleheights.com, lakeofthewoodsmn.com, and Mid-Migration Outfitters offering guided duck and goose hunts this fall. All right, coming up this week, we're going to talk to Lance Tangen. He's a freelance videographer. We're going to talk about some of the adventures that he's been on, and if we have time, we're going to talk about him getting bit by a rattlesnake and how that whole ordeal went down. We've also got Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods, Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and we're going to start with some summer dog training tips with Josh Miller from Sport Dog. He's also with Riverstone Kennels in New Richmond, Wisconsin, and also BritishLabradors.com.
All right, this is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online at SportingJournalRadio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast on iTunes. You can even download that podcasts app and subscribe and get the show delivered right to your phone. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in. That's Midwest's radio home for the outdoors and summertime for guys like me that like to hunt. I like to hunt with dogs, whether it's upland pheasant hunting, grouse, or waterfowl hunting, snow goose hunting in the spring. This is kind of that idle time where, fishing is fun. I really enjoy it, but I love fall. I love getting out there with the 12 gauge and having my dog next to me every step of the way. So I'm always looking forward to fall, and I'm always thinking, gosh, what should I be doing right now? A lot of times people get complacent, their dog gets out of shape, and that's not what you want to do. And of course, with hot weather and the temperatures rising, it's always a little bit of a challenge to do some dog training this time of year, but you should do it. There are ways to do it, and I want to find out some more ways to help you keep your dog in shape over the summer. So Josh Miller is joining us now here on the radio show. He's from Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com from Western Wisconsin. Josh, thanks for being on the show.
You bet, Brad. Thanks for having me.
So this time of year, people really should not get out of the habit of working with their dog, right?
Right. And it's really quite the opposite, where the summertime is a time that you can really take advantage of not only the downtime as far as off season, we'll call it, from hunting season, but also the time of year, being up here in the Midwest, you start to get after hunting season, those winter months. It can just be tough, especially for those of us that are waterfowlers. Everything's froze over, so there's no water work. Even working a field, if we have a couple feet of snow to be fighting, there's only so much progress you're going to be able to get done. And of course, hunting season really isn't the time to be training as far as in the field. You want to be training. It's just like practicing for a high school football game. The practice gets done beforehand, so you can apply it into the field. So this is really the best time to be opportunistic and really make some progress with your dog.
Yeah, I guess winter is generally that time when it becomes the off season and people get a little bit lazy with training. But I forget that because we start snow goose hunting in February, so I don't really have a whole lot of downtime in the winter. But you're right. This time you really should be looking forward. I mean, fall hunting is only 3 months away, not even 2 to 3 months away, depending on where you are and what you're going to be doing. It's really a good time to make sure your dog's in shape right now. So with summer here, obviously, if you can find water that's healthy, clean water, that's probably a good place to start, right?
It really is. And one of the biggest concerns or the biggest things to keep in mind with any of this summer training is the heat. And for me, I can tell you that there's nothing that scares me more than the heat. The heat is something that a lot of these dogs, being that they're so driven, that they're almost not going to show you signs they're being affected by this until they are affected and it's too late. So you really want to be cautious. We do a lot of early mornings, late evenings. If we do stuff during any portion of that middle of the day, it's almost exclusively in the water. And it's short periods of time too. Just because you're in the water doesn't mean that these dogs can't be overworked. So we really want to keep their health and their safety in mind first and foremost. And then from there, then we can really try to come up with a game plan as far as what we're trying to accomplish in each training session.
Our guest is Josh Miller from Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com in Western Wisconsin. He's joining us here on the radio show right now to talk about some training. He's also a product training specialist for Sport Dog, and I want to talk about Sport Dog training collars, training products throughout the show here. But let's start with, let's start with my dog, Mika. She's a 7-year-old lab, and she's done a lot of hunting. She started hunting at 8 months. She's been in the field a lot. But you see it in some of these dogs as they get a little bit older, and maybe it's my fault for not staying on top of some of the training, but they get a little sloppy in some of their, fundamentals or whatever. And it's important to keep some reinforcement training as the dogs get older, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, Brett, because so often when we get a seasoned dog into, years, 4, 5, 6, and so on, sometimes we almost forget about the basics and the fundamentals that really led us to get that finished product that we've enjoyed hunting with for those last couple of years. And I promise you, for every good habit that can be picked up by these dogs, a bad habit is so much easier picked up. So oftentimes, we'll take waterfowl dogs, for example. Oftentimes when the dogs are getting older and they get an opportunity to, say, break before they're sent. And of course, we all know the dangers and things that can come with breaking. But if they can do it once or twice, then all of a sudden they realize, well, a hunting situation maybe is a little different than a training situation. And maybe dad's not focused, so I can get away with this, right? So there are always things that you can go back to, specifically obedience. Obedience is what all of this stems from, right? No matter if we have the most finished dog that we've ever hunted behind, or it's the most basic kind of steps as we are starting this dog's career, the obedience is something that can never be done enough. I have dogs that are, 8, 9, 10 years old, and we still go in and do obedience. We may not be as consistent as far as we're not doing it, maybe 3-4 times a week as we did when they were learning, but we always go back to it, and we always make sure that it's sharp and that it's something that we make sure that foundation is staying solid.
So everybody's dog is the world's greatest dog. Of course, right? You talk to my dog is so good. And I'm very proud of my dog, and I've seen her do some amazing things, but she does break, and she breaks on gunshots. And it's one of those things. I know it's a very hard thing to teach. And, when she was very young, we were encouraged not to stop her from doing that, I guess, to try to keep that drive. So it's been hard breaking her out of that habit of breaking, if that makes sense. So what can I do at age 7? When we're in the backyard, I'll even take shotguns out and have her next to me in the, I'll be in the layout. She'll be in a dog blind next to me, and we'll be shooting shotguns. There's live gunfire. She'll be steady. And you're right. As soon as you get in the field, maybe dad's not focused as much. He's more concerned with pulling the trigger. And I've even gone on hunts where I don't even shoot. I just kind of work her. And then when I'm paying attention, she's great. She sits there. But then as soon as I'm not staying on her constantly, she'll break again on those gunshots. So she kind of comes and goes. Like, she knows she's not supposed to, but she gets so focused on seeing those birds fall out of the sky that she can't help herself. So what can I do at age 7? What can I do with this dog?
You bet. And just for those of us or for those people that are listening that may not know what breaking is simply going before the dog is released. So in a waterfowl type of a situation, it is very beneficial for that dog to be steady throughout all the shooting and throughout kind of all the chaos when those birds are coming in, and wait until the dog is sent. Not only does it give the dog the opportunity to properly mark where each bird falls, but it also keeps them safe. A lot of times we're hunting in layout blinds or pits, something that we're down at more of a ground level. And if that dog is breaking in front of us, oftentimes the people that maybe don't own the dog or haven't been around dogs aren't as conscious of where that dog is, and the dog can get in a dangerous situation.
Very dangerous.
In front of the guns. It really is. So with that being said, one thing that we want to do is anytime that a dog is struggling, and it doesn't matter if this is 7 months or 7 years old, if a dog is struggling at something, we want to take a step back and make it as black and white as possible. We want to communicate as clearly as we can with them. So in this situation, a tool that I really like to use is, you know, we call it a place board. And it's really any area that that dog understands that this is my spot and I'm not supposed to leave this spot until I'm told to. Put yourself in the dog situation in that hunting situation. There's a lot of, there's birds, there's calling, there's all this stuff going on. And we all know how our dogs can really feed off of our emotions. And there may not be more of an emotional high as you're popping up on a group of greenheads getting ready to pull that trigger, right? So as your emotions are boiling over, so is your dog's. And that's usually the tipping point of the dog can't control it anymore and they go out. So first, utilizing that place board in a training situation, and the summertime is a great time to do that. Really get that repetition down, that consistency down, making sure that the dog understands this is my area and I can't leave until I'm told. Then we want to transition it into the situation where, like you said, your dog's in your blind. Well, we want to make sure that dog understands now your place is this dog blind. Then, the next progression is bringing out in the field, and you're right. You're going to have to do quite a few hunts where you probably don't shoot. You're paying attention to the dog. And then the final step that we like to do is kind of switch the roles a little bit, where you maybe shoot and maybe a buddy of yours is watching the dog. The use of an e-collar is a great tool for this, because anybody can have the same correction at the push of a button. But what happens is now you're doing your deal. If he does go to break, he's still going to get that correction, and there's not that as distracted I can go kind of a thought going on.
Sure, that's a great idea. Have somebody else handling the dog while you shoot, so the dog is still seeing you shoot. Josh Miller, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. We're talking dog training, summer dog training, as we gear up for fall. It's not that far away. I know you're thinking about fishing right now, but fall is not that far away, and to have a successful fall, planning should be happening right now. We'll have more with Josh coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio. This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio, heard across the Sporting Journal Radio Network, online, sportingjournalradio.com, or download the podcasts app and get the show delivered right to your iPhone. Very, very simple, Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson, our guest, Josh Miller from Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com. He's also a product specialist with Sport Dog, and we're going to talk a little bit about training collars with Sport Dog products here in a second. We're talking about summer training right now, and one thing I wanted to bring up, Josh, we talked about dogs at break before the break, and one other thing, and this is something I know that you talk about, the difference between maybe British Labradors and other labs, the ability to stay quiet. And my dog was never a whiner when she was in the field. You know, she's very excited. She also upland hunts, so I wanted a dog that was very energetic. And that first year of her life, she drove me absolutely crazy, like a lot of energetic lab puppies do. And even at seven, she acts like a one-year-old a lot of times, just very energetic, just a lot of drive to her, which is great when we're pheasant hunting. When you're waterfowl hunting, you want a dog a little bit more calm. And she was always pretty good in the blind, never really a big whiner until I started snow goose hunting. And tell me if you've ever heard about this before, because once I started telling some other snow goose guides about it, they're like, yeah, the same thing happened to my dog too. And I've heard about this happening before. And when you're snow goose hunting in the spring, obviously you're shooting the snows, but you're also being bombarded with everything else migrating at the same time. So you got Canada geese, you got specks, you got mallards, you got widgeon, and all these other birds buzzing your decoys at 4 feet. They're landing in the spread all around you. They're walking around. And of course, you can't shoot them. You can't do anything about them. You love it, because it's just fun seeing these birds dump into your decoys, but the dog is going ballistic. Like, what is going on here? Why aren't we shooting these birds? They're on the ground. Why can't I go after them? And all of a sudden she started to whine a little bit. And then that kind of has carried over a little bit. Have you ever heard of that before?
Yeah. And you think about your dog in that situation. It is about the most overwhelming thing you can put them into.
Sure. Right?
I mean, there's just so much going on. And actually, a friend of mine who's a very accomplished dog trainer down in Arkansas named Chris Aiken, him and I just spoke about this not too long ago. Actually, it was this winter when we were duck hunting together. And he had said he had one dog that he was in the duck blind, and he was texting a couple clients on his phone. And his dog, which has never been a whiner up to this point, all of a sudden started kind of whining. And he looked up, and he said, you know, what are you doing? And kind of looked at the dog, and he looked up, you know, without him even realizing it. A big group of greenheads had not only dumped into the spread, but had kept coming. So he pulled up and he shot and sent the dog. And he said, you know, everything went great. You know, put the ducks up, you know, kind of settled back down. And right away again, you know, that dog whined, and it hit him that he should not have pulled the trigger there. And he was rewarding the behavior for vocalizing. Now, you know, of course, in a situation that you're talking about, it's so difficult, right? Because those Canadians can come down, those specs can come down, you know, maybe that first, you know, small volley, but you've got, you know, hundreds more, you know, that are working the decoys. You want them to suck in. So it's really difficult to balance at times what's best for the dog and the hunt. And of course, if you're the dog handler, the dog owner, the dog is going to be in the forefront of your mind, where, you know, the eight buddies that are with you, that may not be the case. So once in a while, those situations do come up. And I'll tell you, just to hit the rewind button for those people that might have younger dogs or dogs that are just starting their careers and the retrieving side of things, is that oftentimes we want to get ahead of this as much as possible. And you're right, you know, the temperament of a dog does lead into this a lot. I really am enjoying your British Labs because of that temperament. But that's not to say that a dog that with a different temperament can't do this. So one of the things that we'll do is, as a young dog, we will, once that dog, we understand the retrieve drive is there, you know, we're doing well. A mistake that's often made is that we want this to be a retriever, right? So we're going to retrieve and retrieve and retrieve and retrieve and retrieve with this dog because we want him to love this in the worst way. Well, the reality is once that light switch is turned on, what's inside that dog, mom and dad gave him, right? So now what we're doing is, more than anything, is we're teaching that dog that every single thing that we throw, you get to go get, and you get to go get it right now, right? So when we take a step back and we want this dog to be steady, or we want you know, this dog to be calm, that's a hard switch to now turn off, because he's thinking, why am I not getting to go get it? And if he has to be steady, something has to come out, and then that vocalization happens. So what we'll often do is when we know that these young dogs, they have it, we're doing well, we'll start getting them to be steady on retrieves. And when we throw retrieves, we may only let them go get one of every three or four. And we're really trying to let them know from the get-go that, hey, going to get this is a privilege, and you're not going to go get every one of them. We want you to love this, and I promise you they do. But that's a way just to kind of gear them down right up front, so that you don't have these issues right off the bat as you're getting into your first few hunting seasons.
Josh Miller, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with Riverstone Kennels and BritishLabradors.com. And let's talk about British Labs a little bit. You brought it up there, how the temperament can be a little bit different. And my lab, it's not a British Lab, but she's only 65 pounds. I wanted a smaller lab, but her drive is crazy. Her energy is insane. So tell us about British Labs, because generally you hear about them being a little bit smaller and a little bit calmer. Is that true?
One of the things that really made me such a believer in the British Labs is actually going overseas and seeing how everything is processed. And I think something that is really neat is that they just have done such a fantastic job over there. I think part of this is because hunting is an elitist thing. Not everybody has the access to do this. Thus, the dogs that are being used are being used by fewer people. And those fewer people, they're very particular about, they want very good dogs. Oftentimes, and there's nothing wrong with the dogs that come with this, but we have a lot of dogs that come for training that was more, two neighbors in the neighborhood, one had a male, one had a female, thought they'd have puppies, and we got one of the puppies. And like I said, it's not that great dogs can't come of that, but we're really not stacking our odds as far as an outdoorsman and maybe the athlete and the qualities that we're wanting. So I've really become a big believer in this, now owning BritishLabradors.com. And I think it's really interesting to watch the process of these dogs. I think one of the misconceptions that I've heard out there is that these dogs are short and stocky and they don't have a lot of drive. And it's really interesting how that misconception can come, because I can tell you that I have seven championship trophies that are on my wall that all come from these dogs. They're just fantastic. I actually just got in from running a dog named Brock that's out of our Lions, who just ran a 420-yard blind retrieve with me right before I came to talk to you guys. So these dogs they're incredible. They have a ton of drive. But you're right, that temperament is just different, and they have that ability to kind of shut things down and slow things down and really think. And I think that's really interesting to watch that thought process go. Not everything is so high, so wound up that the vocalization, things like that, can happen. So there are certain qualities there that I think outdoorsmen can really appreciate.
So does the term British lab, are these labs still coming from, from Britain, or are they being bred here and it's just kind of the name for them nowadays? Is it changed from what it used to be?
Well, I can't speak for everybody, but I can speak for my wife and I, and my wife is really the one that handles the breeding side of things more so than myself. But for us, our dogs are coming from overseas, and we have a lot of very good contacts, some of the best trainers that are overseas. We're fortunate enough to be good friends with, and they really tell us, and we lean on them as much as they lean on us as far as what we're looking for and the certain qualities and traits that we're hoping to bring in, and they kind of match up what dogs would be a good fit, and we import dogs fairly often. And we try to really protect our lines. We have a lot of investment and a lot of time into the dogs we're bringing over, and not only the dogs we're bringing over, but the dogs, a number of these dogs we keep as personal dogs. So we keep our lines very protected, and we're trying to do for us what's best for not only the outdoorsman, but for the family dog as well.
Our guest is Josh Miller. We'll wrap up with Josh when we come back. We've also got Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism, Doug Lear from the North Dakota Game and Fish Department, and also Lance Tangen.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
We're back, Sporting Journal Radio. Josh Miller is our guest. He's with Sport Dog, Riverstone Kennels in New Richmond, Wisconsin, and also BritishLabradors.com. Josh, we are talking about the difference between hunting dogs now and hunting dogs before? They become more of family members now, haven't they?
We're trying to do for us what's best for not only the outdoorsman, but for the family dog as well. Because the reality is, I really believe that our society has changed. You know, it's not very often anymore that we hear that, you know, this is an outdoor kennel dog and he never comes inside and he's dad's hunting tool. And we just don't hear that very much anymore, which used to be the norm if you look back, say just, you know, 20, 30 years ago, maybe. Now we're looking at these dogs as really first and foremost, this is a family.
Family,
you know,
this is, for sure.
Exactly. You know, it's part of the family. It goes, you know, it's in the house with us. Oftentimes you're sleeping in bed, you know, with yep. the owners or the kids. I mean, this really is a part of the family, and we want to make sure that, that the temperament and the health behind it, there's a lot of health testing. We try to go really above and beyond to make sure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that these puppies that we're breeding are not going to have any kind of you know, genetic disposition or diseases, whether that's hips and elbows, whether that's eyes, whether that's exercise-induced collapse. You know, there's just so much out there anymore that we're really trying to go above and beyond to make sure that when we give someone a new family member, that they're not going to go through that heartbreak any sooner than they have to. Obviously, I believe a dog's only fault is that they're not with us long enough.
Yeah.
You know, that's a greater power than I that's making that decision. So all that we can do is just cherish the time that they're with us. So it's a task that we take very seriously, and a task that we really enjoy, because there's nothing more rewarding for me to not only be able to fit you know, a family with the right new family member and a puppy, but then be able to go through the journey of the training process and see that puppy, you know, get turned on to birds and go through the gun introduction, and then take that next step to where they're, you know, they're being a proficient duck dog or pheasant dog, and then that last step where, you know, you can take them out and do, you know, 300 yard blind retrieves and casting and just see what a true athlete these guys can become. But yet when the family comes over to see them, these dogs just melt because they love this family so much, and vice versa. So it's really it's a special dynamic, and it's something that I can say that's truly the reason I love my job so much.
For sure. Josh Miller, Riverstone Kennels, BritishLabradors.com. Yeah, Mika, I always tell people just you're just going to have to deal with yellow dog hair when you come to my house or ride in my vehicle. I'll apologize for it, but it's going to happen. You're going to be covered in dog hair, and that's just the way it is. She gets one couch. None of the other furniture. She gets one couch, and she does sleep on the bed. And I've got a couple rules for her. No people food, but other than that, she's pretty spoiled. So, all right, I'll tell you what. I wanted to talk about more training with like the sport dog e-collars. We're running out of time this week. We're going to talk fishing with Joe Henry coming up here in a minute. But I'll tell you what. Can I have you come back on next week's show, Josh, and we can talk more training? Is that all right?
You bet. That'd be fantastic. I'd love to do that.
All right. We'll have Josh back on with Sport Dog, Riverstone Kennels, BritishLabradors.com. BritishLabradors.com. You can find out more information about Josh and his wife and their operation in Western Wisconsin, and about the dogs that they've got there as well, too. So more with Josh next week here on Sporting Journal Radio.
Joe Henry joining us again from Lake of the Woods Tourism. Joe, we didn't say it last week, but happy 4th of July week. It's always weird when it's in the middle of the week like it was. And of course, we celebrated up in Canada. It's always kind of funny. Me and Jamie Dittman, last year, we spent the 4th of July up in Canada too. And we're over there high-fiving and celebrating, and everybody else is just kind of staring at us. You know, like, hell yeah. Happy 4th of July.
You should have been up there during Canada Day.
Yeah. Right. Right. Lake of the Woods had some celebrations, of course, this week. And of course, that coincided. They're all celebrating the opening of the sturgeon season, right, Joe?
July 1st, yeah. So, you know, the sturgeon season closes down for about 6 weeks or so in part of May and in June, and allows those fish to properly spawn and do their deal. And then now, July 1st, it opened up again. It's the keep season. And that means that July 1st through September 30th, you can go out, and if you have a desire to keep a sturgeon, you can keep you have to get a permit, a sturgeon tag, and it's about $5, I believe. You can keep, if it's the right length, you can keep one per year. And the right length would be 45 to 50 inches or 1/75 inches. And otherwise, catch and release is fun. I mean, you're catching huge fish. You're getting typically good numbers of fish. Some people like keeping them and smoking them. I talked to one guy who said, oh, my goodness, that meat, you can broil it. You can fry it. You can smoke it. He just bragged about it. And Other people say, you know, they're a prehistoric fish. I just soon get a picture of them and put them back and catch them again some other time.
Yeah, and I think most people do like to catch and release them, but I'm not going to lie. I wouldn't mind trying it. I've never eaten sturgeon, and I'm one of those guys. I like to try a wild, you know, wild game, wild fish, whatever. I like to try it, and I'd like to try sturgeon. I always thought we'd do it when we go over and do the spearing deal over in Wisconsin. I always thought we'd end up trying it, but we haven't seen a fish yet years we've been trying to spear one. So, but I'd imagine most people up on the Rainy, you know, it's fun going up there in the spring during the catch and release season. Because, I mean, my gosh, Joe, some of those fish are so big and so old. With sturgeon meat, is it a bony meat? Is it just hard to get through that you know, their skin, their hide, I guess? Or what's that meat like?
You know, I can't really speak to it. I have kept one sturgeon in my lifetime, and it was happened to be the proper length, and I caught it ice fishing, and you know what? I brought it into a meat market, and I'll tell you what I did is I brought it in there, and they smoked it for me. Mm. And I'll tell you what, that sturgeon meat was really good. It was very rich. It was good. It was really incredible. So, I mean, I would just say that it was good. Now, I've never kept one since. I kept that one because it was a proper length, and I was pretty confident it wasn't going to make it.
Oh, okay.
I was going to, after a long fight below the ice, I brought it up, and you know, I was trying to release it. A couple of big bubbles came out of it, and it wasn't reacting right. So I said, okay, well, this is my opportunity to try one. And
sure.
That's what we did.
Sure, absolutely. Well, let's talk about the sturgeon a little bit, because the history is pretty neat, because that fish, because of what industry on the river, that fish struggled many, many years ago, and there was a big effort to clean up the river and kind of work towards conservation efforts with the sturgeon in mind, and those have definitely paid off.
Oh, man. The sturgeon population has come back. You know, there used to be commercial fishing, and they used to, you know, obviously commercial fish sturgeon, and they actually used to take the roe, the eggs or the roe or the caviar out of the sturgeon, and they would, you know, steamships would pick it up and bring it up, you know, through Canada, and pretty confident some of that caviar back in the day made its way to Europe. Now, you know, we don't allow any commercial fishing on Lake of the Woods. We haven't since the 80s. So consequently, ever since the commercial fishing for sturgeon has ceased, that combined with the Clean Water Act on the Rainy River, used to be very dirty. I mean, there's stories of anglers that would fish on the Rainy and have to pull their lines up and clean their line off because so much junk from the mills upstream that what they're dumping in the rivers, you know. And so anyway, between no commercial netting and cleaning up of the Rainy River, the population has really, really done well. There's a lot of sturgeon now, and the average size every single year is getting larger and larger. Consequently, when people go sturgeon fishing, you know, they're catching fish. It's not like, oh man, I hope we catch one. They're catching sturgeon. They're catching different size sturgeons, big, little, small. I mean, it's really a neat fishery.
Well, next week, maybe we can talk a little bit about sturgeon again, too, and talk about how there's catch and release records and just how big some of those fish are getting. And Joe, if people want to come up to Lake of the Woods, whether they want to come up and walleye fish yet this summer or plan a winter trip or come up and sturgeon fish, of course, where can they find out more information about all this?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, you go sturgeon fish, you have the river to yourself. It's just gorgeous.
Sure.
You know what? Check out our website. It's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
The numbers are back from North Dakota Spring Pheasant Crowing Count Survey. Hi, this is Doug Lear with your weekly North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. North Dakota's Spring Pheasant Population Index is down 30% from the same time last year, according to the State Game and Fish Department's 2018 Spring Crow Count Survey. RJ Gross, Upland Game Management Biologist, said the number of roosters heard crowing this spring was down in all parts of the state, with decreases ranging from 15 to 38%. In the primary regions holding pheasants. Gross said we entered spring with a lower than average number of adult birds because last year's production was far below average due to the statewide drought conditions. However, Gross said the past winter was good for bird survival, so hens should be in good physical shape for the nesting season. In addition, spring weather has been good so far as most of the state has received adequate rainfall. If the trend continues, a good hatch should be expected. But it will take a few years of good reproduction to get the population back to where it was before the drought. While the spring number is an indicator, it does not predict what the fall population will look like. Brood surveys, which begin in late July and are completed by September, provide a much better estimate of summer pheasant production and what hunters might expect for a fall pheasant population. Pheasant crowing counts are conducted each spring throughout North Dakota. Observers drive specified 20-mile routes, stopping at predetermined intervals and counting the number of pheasant roosters heard crowing over a 2-minute period during the stop. The number of pheasant crows heard is compared to previous year's data, providing a trend summary. That's this week's North Dakota Game and Fish Department Outdoors Report. I'm biologist Doug Lear.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Right now is the time to plan your next fishing trip. This year, make the trek to legendary Devil's Lake. Whether you want to fish walleyes on a summer afternoon or perch out of a heated snow bear in the winter, Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort can make it happen. Hay Bale Heights on Devil's Lake offers year-round lodging and guided fishing packages, perfect for the next family trip or corporate outing. To learn more, search Hay Bale Heights on Facebook or visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com. You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
This is Sporting Journal Radio. I'm Brett Amundson. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio network, online at sportingjournalradio.com, or by subscribing to the podcast in iTunes. You can even download that podcast's app right on your phone and get the show sent to you each week. I'm Brett Amundson. This is the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. Now, a lot of the adventures we end up going on, whether it's with Sporting Journal Radio or with Prairie Sportsman Television, there's a guy with a camera. And one guy who I've spent a lot of time filming with is Lance Tangen. You live in the Twin Cities metro area, right, Lance?
Correct. Yep, Minnetonka.
But you spent some time down in the southeast?
Yeah, I grew up originally in Plainview, near Rochester, close to the Mississippi River there, probably only 15 miles from the Mississippi River and not too far from Rochester. So, yep, spent high school down that way.
You like to go down there with a fly rod?
Fly rod and a bow and a gun. Yeah.
it's beautiful country down there, man. I'm jealous about bow hunting down there. That's there's no big deer down there, I hear.
That's a good way to keep thinking about it too. Right. No, there's some great deer down there. A lot of good deer. I get down there a lot to hunt and look forward to it and do that mostly in my fall when I get a chance.
Well, I wanted to have you on for a couple of reasons. One, of course, we spent time recently filming up on the North Shore in the northeastern part of the state, chasing steelhead with Garrett Sevier from Slab Seeker Fishing. And that was quite an adventure, Lance.
Yeah, it was. It was quite the adventure, especially for, a day run for steelhead. It was from rain to early morning to waiting in high water, but it was also a good time to be on the water with the fish and catching fish. So a good day.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And it was, we caught some fish. It was a really good segment, I think, for Prairie Sportsman Television. I thought it came out really well. You did a great job. And I'll tell you what, I told you that day, too, that you earned your money because we were crossing that river a lot. And you know, walking through water doesn't bother me. Walking through water that's moving pretty fast, I've done that a lot, too. I've been in it with canoes and things like that. You get used to it. But when you start hauling thousands of dollars worth of camera gear and footage that you'll never get back if that camera touches the water, that adds a little bit more of a dangerous element to the afternoon.
Oh, I'd say so. I mean, it was luckily I had a good backpack that was waterproof, that sealed where if I went down, hopefully that would stay afloat and keep water out for at least a long enough time to recover stuff. But still, the chance of getting wet and slipping and being swept away downstream a little bit is always in the back of your mind. And, the water came up too during that morning. It wasn't as bad initially. And then
some light rain and pair that with melting snow. And next thing you know, we're looking at some of that chocolate water that roars a little bit more as it flows through the canyon.
Yeah, I think it came up almost a foot in a couple of hours while we were down there in the middle of the river, and we had a long ways to go. And yeah, there Garrett was telling some stories about getting swept down and floating down a half mile down the river, and you can get places in a hurry floating along that thing. But tell you what, I had a set of waders on that were a half size, a little too big. And, you know, they tell you to put felt on the bottom of your waders up there or whatever. I didn't have any of that. So I was slipping around, and I did not have a waterproof backpack on. So I was a little nervous about dumping my camera in that water, but we didn't. We made it. And we got a great story to tell about it. Great TV show about it. And you can see that at prairiesportsman.org. Let's look for Steelheaded on the North Shore with Lance Tangen, videographer, who joins us here on Sporting Journal Radio right now, talking about some of the outdoor adventures we've gotten to go on. And the other one I wanted to have you on is because it's happening right now again this time of year is Tazon Lake in northwest Saskatchewan. And unfortunately, I'm going up there without you, but we got to go up there that first year, and that's a pretty cool place, huh?
Well, I would have to say, out of the fishing destinations I've been, and I've been to some really neat ones, saltwater adventures and all over the, you know, different parts of the world, but the fish that you can catch up there are unbelievable, and it's quite the adventure to get there in its own, and world-class service for where they are. And I mean, untapped potential, I think, on their fishery and the fishing they can provide to their clients. It's unreal.
It's a 7-day trip, and I know when we were talking about your freelance rates and what to pay you to come up there and this and that, you're like, well, I can knock my price down a little bit if I can fish for a day. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. I'll go talk to my boss. And my boss was like, well, what if that's the day you catch a world record lake trout and he's not filming? I'm like, well, somebody will be filming, okay? There'll be a camera going at all times. We'll get it on camera. And they wouldn't let you fish. And I always felt bad about that because it's tough. I'm sure, man. And you probably do this all the time as a camera guy. You're in these places where it's unbelievable hunting or unbelievable fishing, and you got to sit back behind the camera and film it all.
Yeah. At this point it's normal, you know. I guess it happens all the time. So it's not out of the norm. And that's something that usually I don't have that chance to partake in for the sake of what we're doing for filming for a TV show or for whatever the case might be. But, you know, in certain circumstances it works out. And, you know, in fish, sometimes when you're catching a multitude of fish, you can maybe slip out for a day or be able to work something out on that end. And it's a little maybe different with hunting big game, let's say, when you've got sure. one tag and that's it and you're there for that one thing. But yeah, I mean, I've gotten used to the fact that I'm not there to pull the trigger or swing the rod, but the way I always look at it is I've been able to enjoy a lot of experiences and places that I never could have afforded myself, for one, you know. And I've seen a lot around the world at this point, and definitely experiences that I'll remember and enjoy, whether it was me doing that or not. So the camera is also there to, you know, relive the tale and tell the story and about the journey. So it's an important part that obviously I'm doing my job to try to make sure and capture that as best we can too. So
our guest is Lance Tangen, freelance videographer here on Sporting Journal Radio, and you nailed it right there. And I'm getting to that point now, and I know I've seen pictures of fish you've caught. I know you've done pretty well, and we did sneak in to catch one of those steelhead on that trip up to the North Shore up there, which was pretty cool. So, I mean, after a while, when you do get to at least catch some fish and have some of these experiences, I'll tell you what, sometimes it's more fun. It can be more challenging and more daunting and more nerve-wracking to be behind the camera when you know your task with the job of capturing it. You know, it's just, say you do, especially big game, you got one chance, one tag, one, especially if your show is going after a mega giant and the guy ends up shooting that deer or elk or whatever. And if it's out of focus, you're in trouble, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And there's also cases too, and I mentioned it about fishing, where, you know, sometimes you'll have the chance to film a bunch and you can take some of the better ones and make it what you will with the time you have to air online or on TV, whatever the case is. But the other weekend I was filming a fishing tournament. So that's a separate case where they're not giving you the time to look at the fish and get a nice close up. It's being caught and it's going into the live well. And if you don't have that 24-inch, 25-inch walleye that they caught that was going to win the tournament, you know, it kind of, you know, is that make or break moment too. So like I say, it doesn't always apply across the board that way, but yeah.
And I think Jim Shockey said it recently that outdoor cameraman is about the hardest job in the world. And man, I believe him. You know, not only are you have to go through some treacherous terrain with very high end, expensive video equipment, but then you actually have to be able to film whatever, you know, whatever you're chasing and get the shot. And sometimes you're working, you know, in rain, in wind, in bad light, and you're dealing with wild animals. So it's not like you can position the animal in the frame. You got to get set up, get the shot in focus, get it framed right, get, you know, get everything dialed in. It's definitely a tough job. And I want to ask you, like, who do you film for? What are some of the other cool places you've gotten to do? And you got bit by a rattlesnake, and I want you to tell that story coming up here on Sporting Journal Radio, because that's nuts. When I heard about that, I was like, holy smokes. But tell us, who do you do a lot of filming for?
Well, for I guess 15 years now, after I shouldn't say even after I graduated from University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, I had been filming part-time through college, but I guess this is my 15th year filming freelance with different shows. And I guess some of my start that I worked with was North American Whitetail Television when that first started up on the Outdoor Channel. And then I guess it's since moved to Sportsman Channel. But a long list along the way, you know, worked with a lot of different people, a lot of different shows, but always been freelance, just doing, owning my own equipment and doing my own stuff with different shows. I guess skipping ahead a little bit, more recent, a lot of the stuff has been with a show called McMillan on Sportsman Channel, and then a show, Fox Pro, which is a predator hunting show on the Outdoor Channel as well. And then, you know, it's kind of a mix of other stuff along the way too, from fishing to outdoor stuff in the summer. And, you know, there's consistent ones and there's some that you might get one call from a year. So
sure.
Kind of wide ranging, really, to tell you the truth there.
Well, I want to talk about Fox Pro, because that's the one where you got bit by the rattlesnake, right? I want to hear that story when we come back. We'll also find out about some of the other adventures you've been a part of too. We're talking with Lance Tangen, freelance videographer, who we've done a lot of filming with here on Sporting Journal Radio. And we have the same birthday. How cool is that? A few years apart, right. but same birthday. It's very cool.
That's right. It is very cool. That's Lance Tangen, videographer here on Sporting Journal Radio. And Lance got bit by a rattlesnake. It's a crazy story. And what's even crazier is the hospital situation and the hospital bill involved with that rattlesnake bite. And Lance, we're just running out of time to tell that story. So I'm going to have you back next week. Let's talk more with Lance Tangen next week here on Sporting Journal Radio. We'll talk about that snake bite and some of the other adventures he's been all over the world filming for outdoor television. All right. Also, my thanks to Joe Henry and, of course, Josh Miller from Riverstone Kennels, Sport Dog, and BritishLabradors.com. Josh will be back next week. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening, and make sure you take some time to spend some time in the outdoors this week. Thank you to all my affiliates. And, of course, don't forget you can download this show and listen to it in the podcasts app on your iPhone as well. Search for Sporting Journal Radio.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors, on the Sporting Journal Radio Network. To listen to this show again, get the latest hunting and fishing news and more, visit sportingjournalradio.com.